Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fireside Chat. I have no idea what number it is, and I'm not sure you even know what number it is because sometimes we don't follow the numerical sequence of the sequence in the eschatological realm of the sequence. Very strange mood today, so welcome back to Earth, Dennis. Hi, everybody. Fireside Chat. Seriously, we have a rough number.
Number 328.
Oh, we do? Yeah. So this is actually 328.
Yeah.
Oh, so what did I go through that whole thing for?
I don't know.
Okay, hi. 328. Okay, it's my opportunity to talk to you and take your questions every week. And I mean every week. I am really devoted to the Fireside Chat. Couple of thoughts, and then, of course, I take your questions. By the way, I do want to remind you, because I do often remind you that I really do believe it's worth listening to any one of these 328 again, because I try to make every one meaningful and very few are dated. In other words, not relevant anymore. Okay, so a couple of things on my mind. I'll begin with something you won't expect. The lyrics to a Taylor Swift song. I know the song is out about a year. It was nominated for a Grammy Award as the top song and album of the year. I think it's called Anti-Hero. But it is definitely worth my mentioning it to you. If I can find where I put the lyrics. There we go. It's not insignificant. And many of you will know these lyrics. It's the refrain of the song, actually, one part of it. So, it's me, hi, I'm the problem, it's me. I stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. There are the two other lines that are not part of the refrain. I get older, but just never wiser. That is repeated. And did you hear my covert narcissism I disguise as altruism? It's a very intellectual line, actually. So I'm the problem. Do you realize that? I would say to you that the moment an individual knows that, there is an immeasurably greater chance of being a deeper, finer, wiser, better human being. That's the key. I have said this in the past, that all of my life, basically, and I've been speaking since my 20s and writing since then too. My first book was out when I was 25, still in print, I'm proud to say. And that is that having gone to a religious school, in my case, a religious Jewish school called a yeshiva, every one of us was told that the biggest problem in our lives is us. And I believe in secular schools increasingly, certainly today, and probably more than a few even religious schools, because they've adopted secular values in too many cases. The great issue is not the kid, not the individual, but the society. I am not my problem. America, or whatever society you live in, that's the problem. I am not the problem in my life. Racism is the problem. Misogyny is the problem. Inequality is the problem. Capitalism is the problem. Not me. I'm basically terrific. And by the way, kids were raised for the last 50 years to believe they are terrific. That's why they gave trophies to kids for participation. You didn't have to win in a sporting event in order to get a trophy. You just had to participate. You're terrific. That's the message. You're terrific. The amount of praise I hear parents give their children for nothing. Oh, that was awesome. The most abused word in the English language is awesome. Awesome was like the highest degree of of excellence that you could achieve in life. And now your waiter says to you when you order, yeah, I'll have an iced tea. That's awesome. I'm thinking, really? It's awesome to order an iced tea. Of course, you know, I'm not blaming the waiter. It's just the way language has evolved. But almost every word has been somewhat cheapened. But it's all part of it. You're not the problem. So when I had the fireside chat with my son, Aaron, which you really should watch. I very rarely have guests. And it was riveting. I'm not saying it because he was my son. It just was. He's been sober for 7 years. And he was born to a meth addict. That was his birth mother. She was a 17-year-old or 16-year-old meth addict. I did not know it at the time. His late mother and I adopted him, not knowing that this would be an issue, and it was an issue for about 10 years. If you ask him, and I did, when did you decide to turn your life around? And by the way, tragically, not every addict makes that decision, or at least not makes it and have it stick.
You actually asked what was his bottom.
What was his bottom? Yes, that's correct. When did you reach bottom? Because that's his theory, that in order, ultimately, you have to hit bottom, not reach bottom. You have to hit bottom to get sober, to get on the road to sobriety. And he said he hit bottom when he realized he had nobody else to blame. It's a beautiful way of putting it. He had run out of people to blame for his predicament. And he said, oh, I'm my problem. And that was the road. And now he's superb. He does his own podcast. He's a thinker. He's married. He wants to make a family. It's remarkable how, back to the Taylor Swift line, those lines are life-changing. Let me, because I'm not good. I have a lot of gifts, but memory is not one of them. Never was. I can remember concepts, but I can't remember lines. So I want to get it right. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. I'll stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. That's a good line. I'll stare directly at the sun. In other words, nobody could stare directly at the sun. Her point is, and I feel funny, I'm like analyzing her lyrics like I do biblical texts, but it's a very important line. You can't stare at the sun. So she says, it's easier to stare at the sun than it is to stare in the mirror. Yeah, that's good. It's a good line. The moment you do that, you realize that for the vast majority of people, we are the issue. We are our problem. And that problem comes, by the way, in two dimensions. Human nature and your individual nature. Human nature is a problem, but we all share human nature. That's why it's called human nature. We all have two natures, human nature and our own individual nature. They're both problems. That realization is life-changing. So I salute her for those lyrics. A thought on the Super Bowl, which just took place. It was quite a good game. It's the one football game of the year. I don't even watch the whole game. I always watch the last quarter of the Super Bowl. And I've often rewarded. They're often very close games. The thing, though, that is very troubling, and for which reason I am not a big supporter of the National Football League in America, is that they played what's called the Black National Anthem as well as the American National Anthem. A country can't have two national anthems. There is one United States of America, or there will not be a United States of America. A vast number of Americans died in a civil war to keep America together, and now the NFL is leading the crusade to divide America into two nations by race. at least in the Civil War, the division was based on values, obviously emanating from race because of slavery. But nevertheless, the issue was values. You're pro-slavery, we're anti-slavery. This isn't even on values. This is just on race. That's pathetic. So when I think of the contribution that the National Football League is making under its president, Roger Goodell, as I wrote in a column that I wrote on this subject, there were not many people of whom it will be able to be said, he made his country worse. Of that man, it will be said of. There's no doubt in my mind. That this is not the only example, but this is one of the examples. I would really like to ask, does the average Black American believe that they are part of another nation? That there's a Black nation and a non-Black nation? And what if you're a Black and you believe there's only one national anthem because there's only one American nation? What nation are you part of? That's why it must confuse people who support the idea of a Black national anthem being played at the biggest sporting event in America when they know there's a not insignificant percentage of Blacks who believe there's only one national anthem. Are they not Black? Have they left the nation, the Black nation? One of the three mottos of the United States of America is E Pluribus Unum. It's Latin for from many, one. The left has inverted it from one, many. They don't like any of the three parts of what I call the American Trinity. E Pluribus Unum, in God we trust, and liberty. My book, Still the Best Hope, explains all of that. I rarely mention that book. It's a very important book, if I'm allowed to say that. It's three books in one: American values, left-wing values, and Islamist values. It explains the world in which we live. Still the Best Hope. Give it a try. Okay, time for your questions. And we begin with...
Hey, Dennis. Hey, I'm Timothy Johnson. I'm from Fontana, California. It is currently flooding over here, but I'm reading the New Testament right now and the Old Testament. And in the New Testament, in John 8, Jesus says that before Abraham was born, I am. And then the Jews at the time picked up stones to stone him because he was claiming that they said to be God. And it reminded me of Exodus 3:14 when God says to Moses, I am that I am. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on it.
Thank you. One second. Let's see if I can do this, the job. I did. So proud of myself. Okay, Timothy Johnson, thank you very much. So I'm not entirely sure I'm pretty sure, but I'm not entirely. When you want my thoughts, because when you threw out God says to Moses, I am what I am, or that I am. By the way, the Hebrew is, I will be what I will be. Now, I'm going to tell you something fascinating to me. I pray it's fascinating to you. Hebrew, and by the way, not just Hebrew. Arabic and Russian. And I assume a number of other languages. You'll find, I can't believe you won't find this fascinating. There is no present tense of the verb to be in those languages. He is the present tense of to be. I am. Am is the present tense of to be. We are, the present tense of. There is no is, am, are for the present tense in those languages. So therefore you would say, let's say in Russian. So I am a brother, or I am a doctor. Ya is I, and then you just say brother. Ya, I brother, I doctor. Same with Hebrew. There's future and there's past of to be, but not present. So it's very interesting. So therefore, there is no Hebrew really for I am what I am, even though that's how it's translated. In Hebrew, it would be ani, which is I, ani, masha ani, I am what I am, but it doesn't go right in Hebrew. So the Hebrew is, I will be what I will be. But because there's no present tense, it has been translated as I am that I am. Okay, that's just an excursion into one of my favorite subjects of life, grammar. The number of people who like grammar is probably equivalent to the number of people who enjoy beekeeping. Is that true, you think? But I made it interesting, because it is interesting. Yeah, there's no present tense. It's very interesting. Okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. So what matters is my take on, I assume, the issue of Christ calling himself divine, right? Yes, this, so I could talk about this for hours, and I probably will when I do the Daily Wire next Bible series with Jordan Peterson. We did Exodus, and we'll be doing the Gospels next. And so I'll just say this. The great rift between Judaism and Christianity, since obviously Jesus was Jewish, Paul was Jewish, the apostles are Jewish, three of the four Gospel writers are Jewish. I mean, it's a completely Jewish movement. But there was a rift, a big rift, obviously. That's how they became separate religions. And it was not over whether Jesus is the Messiah. That would not have caused another religion. Jews have believed in different figures as messiahs in different times in their history. And so that some Jews would believe Jesus is the Messiah, other Jews would go, okay, you know, have a great day. I'll see you in synagogue on Saturday. The issue was the claim of divinity. That's where the rift came. Well, there were two rifts, two huge rifts. That was one, and that it was no longer necessary to observe all the laws of the Torah. Those were the two big rifts. Okay, so what is there to say? I have made it a habit, and remember, I have dialogued an immense amount with Christians. In fact, I am proud to say that I am as immersed in Christians' lives as in Jews' lives, and I'm a practicing Jew, and that is true. I really think I understand both communities pretty well, and I have great affection for both. And by the way, I know it's reciprocated. A lot of Christians have great affection for me, and I've earned it, to be honest. I worry about the demise of Christianity as much as Christians do, maybe more. So it remains that those, so the point I wanted to make is I have made it a policy in my life. I never debate theology. And I don't know why people do. I mean, I'm not against it, but I don't debate faith. I debate reason. I debate morality. I debate a whole host of things, but I don't debate faith. But I believe, as an example, I believe that God gave Moses the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. Now, why would anybody debate that with me? That's my belief. What are they going to do? Prove to me that Moses was not on Mount Sinai, that Moses didn't exist? Once something is faith, I don't think debate matters. What matters is the results of your faith. That matters. That's why I'm a big fan of James in the New Testament, that faith without works is dead. Basically, what James is saying, and James is the brother of Jesus, What he is saying is that there's no such thing as faith if the works don't express what the faith is. It's sort of like, I'll give a totally random secular example. I believe it's going to really rain today. I don't want to get my clothing wet, but I won't take an umbrella. So it's hard to believe you really believe that it's going to rain that badly if you don't take an umbrella, if you claim you don't want to get wet. Then clearly, if your action is not a logical consequence of your faith, in this case that it will rain, then you don't really believe it. That's what James, and he's absolutely right. How can you claim that you believe in Christ, you believe in God, you believe in the Bible, and then lead a terrible life, just cheat people and hurt people and so on? Everybody sins. That's a given. So this is not a game of gotcha, which some atheists play with religious people. Oh, well, he's a religious guy and he did X or Y. People are still people. But if you constantly do it, it's hard to believe you have that faith. But anyway, I don't argue faith, but I just wanted to explain to you, Timothy, and to everybody watching, listening, that's the great rift, the claim of divinity. And Jews would not have, most Jews at any rate, obviously they were Jewish followers of Jesus. They, in the beginning, they were the only followers of Jesus. Until, obviously, Paul opened it up to the non-Jewish world. But Jews would not have understood, most Jews would not have understood the claim that he was God or the Son of God. But I'm not arguing the issue. I'm only describing again where that rift came. Barry, 40, New Jersey, USA. Greetings, Dennis. Greetings, Barry. Over the past year, I've made it a habit to welcome you into my home every Shabbat morning, the Sabbath morning, via Fireside Chats. That's sweet. This past Saturday, it occurred to me that perhaps I should ask you if you felt it was an appropriate Shabbat activity. After all, it is your Sabbath too. P.S. I highly recommend your Rational Bible series to any Fireside Chat fans. Truly the most accessible commentary for the modern reader. I'm eagerly awaiting the next volumes. I believe that too. I think it's the clearest explanation of the first five books of the Bible. Four are out, and a fifth I'm working on, Leviticus. Anyway, that you would watch my Fireside Chat on Saturday not only doesn't trouble me, I'm deeply pleased and honored by that fact. Now, I'm assuming from the question that you're not Jewish. And even if you were Jewish and you were not Orthodox, an Orthodox Jew would not use electricity on Shabbat, so it would be the question wouldn't even be asked. But I would certainly say that my Fireside Chats are closer to keeping the spirit of Shabbat than a football game or going golfing or whatever else somebody might do on a Saturday morning. But it does remind me of sensitive Christians with whom I will have dinner at a restaurant, let's say, and it frequently happens, and they will ask something to the effect, they will, or even say, you know, I won't be having shellfish or pork. You know, I don't want to insult you or offend you. And I'm thinking, it's so sad. It's so sweet that they feel that, but that it's so sad that they would think it offends me if they eat something that I don't eat because of my religion. I smoke my cigar when my Mormon friends come to my house. If I were to say, it might be sweet to say, are you offended? But they would look at me and go, what, are you kidding? Why would I be offended? Any more than I'll be offended if they bring a, you know, if they're eating a BLT. It's a sweet thought, but it's not coherent. You're not obligated to my religious rituals, and I'm not obligated to your religious rituals. And that's the end of the issue. Okay. Steven in Dix Hills, New York. Love your show and how you touch people's lives. Thank you. This is a difficult question. I'll understand if you skip it. Okay, I'll skip it. I retired somewhat early to help my youngest son, my youngest son of three, not 3 years old, youngest of three sons or three children. He's 22. Through a diagnosis of opioid-induced psychosis and depression, seemingly after his first year of college, where he mostly smoked pot, apparently. After a year of psychiatric treatments, including ECT, which I was opposed to because of the movie, he no longer smokes pot and is no longer suicidal, but extremely defiant, sleeps all day, plays video games all night, and is very disrespectful to me. I've removed several privileges like his cell phone and Wi-Fi. We haven't spoken to each other for 6 months, yet he lives in my house and eats my food. It's a sad situation. The Bible says if your son disrespects you, you should rebuke him, but be prepared to accept if he repents himself. I don't see that happening anytime soon. My wife and I don't know what to do. I only let him know if he becomes violent again, he will no longer live in my house. I love the kid. What are your thoughts? And God bless. Okay, so I don't know any of the people involved here. I always hesitate to give advice in these matters because people care what I have to say or they wouldn't ask me by definition. So to the extent that my answer would influence any of your behavior, I feel very humbled in this regard. Maybe I'm wrong. I just want to say that at the outset. So I can only say that based on what you write, what I would do based on what you write, I would not let him live in my home with that behavior. I want to offer you some examples. My son, the one I mentioned earlier, who was addicted to alcohol and drugs for years, and then at 23 he became sober, thank God, and he's doing great, as it should be obvious from our fireside chat. So I had a number of his friends, all recovering addicts like himself. He knows them through AA. They're wonderful young men. I love them. I really do. I love them. So I had them on my radio show many years ago when I broadcast from Philadelphia. He's in Pennsylvania. And one of his friends told the following story. Not on the air, because he couldn't use the language and partially because it didn't come up. But he was one of those on the air and told me the story prior to his coming on the show. Dennis, he said, my dad saved my life. Really? Wow. How? Because he said to me when I was addicted, you know the story?
No, but I'm predicting what he's going to say.
What do you think he'll say?
His dad didn't. He kicked him out.
Yes. Yeah. So his dad, yes, but the words are choice. What was it? Basically, get the F out of my house, and he used the word, and come back when you're sober. And he said, my father saved my life by doing that. When people talk about enabling people, I don't know any more than you wrote. But based on what you wrote, you're enabling him. And the fact that he acts this way toward you, that should certainly end the issue. And by the way, I've never told this story publicly. So given that Aaron is open about everything, I feel he would not be upset if I told this. In the very beginning of his recovery process, I would cross the country and visit him in Pennsylvania. I live in California. It's a long trip. Because even when I got to Philadelphia, I still had an hour and a half to 2 hours of driving. But he's my son. I love him. And he was in therapy. And you know, I was aching for him to do better. So in the very beginning, he was still in a defiant stage. And I remember he would start yelling at me during the meetings with his therapist. So I finally said to him, I am not crossing the country to be yelled at and disrespected. When you change, I'll visit next time. And that was it. And he never did it again. It was a total transformation in how he acted toward me. A parent cannot be a doormat. Your child needs a parent more than any other thing, especially in troubled times. And the parents are willing to forego their parental role for the sake of their child continuing to love them or talk to them or whatever it is. But you have done your child no favor when you cease being a father or a mother. And that's my view, and it has always been my view. I could give other stories, but I think that suffices for now. To have him defiant, disrespectful in your home and not speak to you for 6 months, then you're not his father. I'm sorry to be so direct, but you asked me. How are we doing now?
We're at the end.
Yeah, that's a big one. I had a talk about this in another fireside chat. The role of the parent is, and its significance in the life of a child, and I don't mean a five-year-old. At 20, it's as important as at five. My dog agrees. Anyway, I hope this has all been of some help. And yes, it's easier to look at the sun than in the mirror. Good line, Taylor Swift. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.